and welcome to the latest Talking Points podcast. As ever, my name's James Skoltok, and I'm the IMI's Motor Pro magazine editor. Joining me today is IMI CEO Steve Nash, and we'll be discussing some of the biggest issues facing the industry and how the IMI is helping to address them. So, without further ado, let's dive in. So, shall we kick off with Auto Mechanica then? It's a huge event. What were your initial impressions walking around? What was the vibe like? Was it all sort of very sort of positive, or was there questions going on, or what was it like?
I think the vibe at Auto Mechanica was generally very positive, actually. I think that, look, we're still in that mode where we're actually kind of quite pleased to see each other again. You know, we haven't got over that novelty yet of actually seeing each other face to face. It does make such a difference. I mean, I think we all understand there are benefits both ways. You know, hybrid working is, wherever possible, probably the way forward. You know, driving an hour for an hour's meeting and an hour back is not great use of your time, unless you really, really need to engage face to face with somebody. But but those kind of meetings, I said yesterday, I was asked by Auto Mechanica themselves what I thought of the show, and I said, you know, this is an automotive show for automotive people, which is a really good thing, because we collectively as a family in automotive have a lot going on, don't we? I mean, we have a lot going on, a lot of challenges and opportunities, and we need to be talking to each other, because, you know, I mean, there were some great exhibits there yesterday. Some of the supply people in the supply chain and so on had some really good stuff there. I mean, I'm not favoritism here, but I mean, somebody pointed out to me when I came into the hall that we were in. There was a really great display by Bosch. It was like an open, it was like an exploded car almost, you know, which just showed what all the EV elements are in a car. So for somebody who really doesn't understand what an EV looks like under the skin, how different it is from an internal combustion engine car, it was there, you know, it's there to be seen. And there were experts of every kind on everything. And it was just really good. There were lots of people there came to learn. We had our team that were delivering EV and general tech safe messages, you know, covering the new technologies, were bombarded, actually. And lots of our members turned up and earned CPD points and so on. So it was, I mean, I think in summary, it was a good show. There was a lot going on. Auto Tech had 250 students there, you know, who were all very engaged. And it was, you know, timely, I think, because, you know, lots of good connections made by everybody with everybody else, you know. So,
I guess that's
in some way a good show.
I guess the point you made about the Bosch stand is important, because, you know, if I was with Ford earlier in the week looking at their Mach-E, and you pop the bonnet on that, you're looking inside and you don't really see anything. So, you know, it's not like with a combustion engine, you think, oh, so these are the working parts. This goes there. This happens. So,
well, the reality is, James, I mean, you don't really see that much on an internal combustion engine anymore, do you? Because they all have covers over them.
Yeah. That is true.
It's not like the old days. But you're absolutely right. There's no way that if you were really truly out trying to understand how an electric car works, that lifting the bonnet is going to reveal everything you need to know, because the componentry is all over the car. So having this kind of sort of skeleton shell of a car, but with all the components there and in the right place, great for, you know, I imagine a lot of those students, you know, sort of found that very, but when actually not just the students, let's be honest, there's a hell of a lot of people that, you know, would have found that very useful just to see that. And there were, I mean, as I said, you know, there were a lot of very good exhibits there, some very good stuff going on. And I mean, but from our point of view, the reason I was there particularly, so it was the third day, third and final day, and there'd been a very big focus around technical stuff, which is understandable. It's kind of predominantly a technical show, but we were giving some, we were debuting some information on the labor force, on the workforce, and And that was very that was and is very important too, because of course you know nothing happens. It doesn't matter how good your technology is if you haven't got people to work on it and people to deliver it and people to engage with it. That's none of us move anywhere. So it sort of brings together a lot of strands of research that we've been doing. So we've been talking for a while about kind of keeping people abreast of the ongoing challenge to upskill the workforce around electrified vehicles. And we are making good progress. There is still a skills gap. I am pleased to say that it wasn't, so long ago. We were looking at a skills gap in 2026 and then 27, then 28. It's moved up to about 29 now. But, I mean, it is still there. And it's based on a projection. It's not that we actually have those numbers yet. It's based on what we have today, which is around 39,000 people qualified at the continued qualification rate, which would take us just below where we need to be in 2030, which is about 103,000. It goes up quite rapidly after that, though, because, from that point onwards, we're only selling electrified vehicles. So, it goes up to about 130-something thousand in a couple of years after that. So, there's still a big job to do around that. More disturbing to do the analysis around ADAS. Because, we keep talking about future technologies. They aren't anymore, are they? They're here. No. They're here. Yeah. And as of last year, every car coming off the production line has ADAS. And that's not just one system. It's a number of systems that are now mandatory in this country. So, having people not knowing how to fix and calibrate and reset those systems when they've done other work is rather worrying. It's a very difficult number to get to, because we know how many are formally qualified through TechSafe. I do accept that there will be people out there that have done other forms of training, probably internal training at the organisations they work with, that's non-accredited. But they need to know that there is a regulation in the making which will require people to be qualified, to be able to show that they've got a formal qualification or accreditation to do that work. So being unaccredited is not good enough. We collectively now, or at least in governmental terms, they refer to this as level 2 autonomy. And I think we're already kind of hitting the top end of level 2. So level 2 is what we all describe as ADAS. But at the highest level, there's still quite a lot of hands-off in there.
Most definitely. Ford again, I mentioned Ford before, didn't I? And they had, and I think I spoke about this in the previous podcast, Blue Cruise is basically level 2, but hands-off. So level 2 is still a fairly intricate system, isn't it?
Most certainly, and we're moving beyond that. We are moving into level 3. There are level 3 systems out there, and they will come to market. So, this is an important issue. It's an important issue. It's a we really shouldn't be qualifying technicians at any level. We shouldn't be qualifying young technicians without making sure they have at least a minimum understanding of that technology, because you can't really say that if every new car now has this technology on, you can't really say you're properly qualified if you don't have some knowledge of it. You take that; those are specifics, and then you look at the overall picture. And the overall picture, I'm not by nature a negative person. I always believe that if there's an issue, you can find a solution. But I have got to sort of set the proposition up here. We currently have in the automotive sector outside of the factory gates. So, there's roughly 600,000 people working outside the factory gates, just under 200,000 working inside. So it is in employment terms the biggest bit of the sector by some margin. We have a record number of vacancies at the moment, 26,000 vacancies. Now, those numbers have only ever been measured for the last 21 years, and they've never been that high before. And what's worse is that there's a problem that we know exists across the whole sector, because it's a combination of demographics. It's the baby boomers dropping off one end and the generations coming through at the other end not being as numerous. It's a combination of, in addition to that, post-pandemic, we know that something like just over 20% of the potentially available workforce didn't come back. So a lot of people opted to take early retirement or go off and discover themselves or something. You know, there's been a little bit of a reverse trend on that owing to cost of living. But you know, I mean, it's still an issue. But then you've got Brexit too. You know, an awful lot of the people that were here opted not to stay, as much as anything else, because the exchange rate wasn't favourable anymore, and they weren't able to send money home anymore because you know, we were almost at parity with the euro, weren't we? So that's the problem. It affects every single sector, but and that's a big but. There are only three sectors at the moment that are still going in the wrong direction. That's us, hospitality, and food. And those were the three sectors that were actually worst affected during the pandemic.
Okay.
And then you look inside that and there are some very serious, there are some particularly acute issues in some subsectors, like heavy goods vehicle technicians, for example. I've written to Gillian Keegan at the Department for Education about that. I've also engaged the Department for Transport in that to say, you need to be joining me in encouraging your colleague Gillian Keegan to take this seriously. You know, we need extra funding around apprenticeships. We need, you know, so lots of issues that we're also asking for a number of our occupations to be put on the shortage occupation list, which is a way of being able to bring people into the country much easier. So it's a tacit acceptance on their part that, you know, we do need some overseas workers. You know, we don't have all the answers here. So, yeah, lots going on. But the biggest thing is the perception campaign.
Yeah.
And the perception campaign is an action that we're taking. Well, it's one of a number of actions we're taking. It's a very significant one we're taking to try and help the industry address the shortages. And it's a high level, very high quality campaign. And before anybody asks, no, we don't have the kind of funds for that sort of thing. But we're very fortunate to have the worldwide head of Peugeot, Linda Jackson, as one of our vice presidents. And she has incredibly kindly lent us the services of her international marketing department and their her international agency to help us put this campaign together. And what it does, it aims to change perceptions and change people's perceptions about the attractiveness of automotive as a place to work. So it features all sorts of people that most people outside of our industry would not think would work in our industry, doing jobs they would not think they would do, and having careers that they wouldn't know existed. And we've got a number of people that we're featuring in that initially. We're actually going to kick off regionally, because what we've realized within all of our data and research is that whilst the problems are national, there are some areas that are more badly affected than others. So we're concentrating on the most badly affected areas to begin with. But this is not something the IMI can do on its own. So we've created the campaign with the great help we've had from the people at Peugeot. It's a great campaign. We've got some great people featured in it. But it's a call to action to the industry to say, help us to help you. We need you to come forward with your people, telling us people that we can feature that, you know, will help tell that story, help get across, you know, the great opportunities and the emerging opportunities in our industry around new technologies and, you know, new processes and everything else that are going on very, very rapidly. So
It always astonished me somewhat that the automotive sector has such a perception problem, because obviously I'm slightly biased because I cover the industry and have done for a number of years, and it always, to me, feels like an industry that is pushing forward, is always on the front foot, has always got a lot of diversity and career choices. So why wouldn't people think about it as a career choice? But it, for some reason,
I absolutely agree. If you're somebody who's motivated by change, by things that by a forward looking, you know, a forward looking industry, there are few that outdo automotive. Really, I mean, you know, I've said before, haven't I? I think on one of these podcasts, you know, if you're into tech, there isn't anything more high tech than a car. You take all the highest tech you've got at home and stick it all in a package that can operate in all sorts of weathers and temperatures, and you know, go very fast and stop on a sixpence and all the rest of it. That's what a car is, and they're becoming more and more sophisticated. The other thing is, you know, I mean, to me, it's always been motivating to know that, you know, that the day you launch a new car, you know that the engineers are already well ahead with the car that's going to replace it and the one after that.
Yeah,
you know, as one of the things I was privy to working as an OEM, that once a year I used to go to the engineering department and we would see everything that the organization was planning for the next 25 years. So in some cases they were just line drawings or clay models, but you know, it really underlined how far ahead they were looking, and that was really exciting. You know, you just couldn't wait to see these things.
Yeah, so a naive question then. Why has automotive got this perception problem then, given what we've both just said?
I think it's a lot of things, really. I think it's part of its evolution. It's where we've come from. I think it was predominantly a male preserve. It was about working on heavy mechanical things. You know, let's be honest, a little bit dirty. It's moved on enormously. I mean, look, you know, it's a very, very wide and varied sector. I've said so many times, you know, we've got 48 trade bodies. That's how broad we are. Those things do still exist, you know. And you know, this is about us moving away from the, instead of moaning about the negative perceptions, instead of moaning about Arthur Daly or Phil Mitchell on EastEnders or whatever, because actually, you know, the reality is they have existed and they do still exist in some in some places, but there, you know, there is just this massive extra massive piece which is so different to that, which is the wider industry that we want to attract people to. And you know, I think it's, but there is that basic misconception that automotive consists of people who sell cars, people who fix them, and a few people who manage them, whereas in actual fact, you know, we got more than 150 roles in automotive retail alone. You know, and new ones, it's changing all the time. You know, I mean, as we see changes around the distribution model from franchise to agency, that will bring new requirements, changing requirements. As the technology changes, we'll get, you know, as we move into omni-channel selling, you know, new requirements, new skills. And I just don't think people know about that stuff. I think there's a sort of popular image that's never been challenged. You know, you're never likely to see Phil Mitchell going for his TechSafe assessment and failing, are you? You know, or even his MOT assessment. Let's not be as ambitious as TechSafe. You know, because they're just cameos, aren't they? You know, that's what he does. He's got that garage where he stands up to his ankles in oil. You know, it's you know. This is such an exciting industry, and there are people who can demonstrate that. Not me, I'm too old. Even though I've had a brilliant career in the industry, and I am happy and I am often happy to talk to young people about that and how they could maybe do the same. But seeing lots of young people who are in the industry and who have opened up opportunities that, you know, would blow people's socks off if they actually understood what was available to them. You know, when I first took this job over at the IMI, and I was, that's 10 years ago now, believe it or not, you know, it goes very quickly.
Yeah, time flies.
I calculated Well, I calculated then that the industry was spending, you know, well north of £100 million a year on training. You know, I mean, we really put our money where our mouth is when it comes to developing people. And, you know, why wouldn't you want to work in an industry like that? You know, it's, you know, and we're crying out for people too. So it's a great time for people to access those opportunities because, you know, we're the door is open and we're waiting for them.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess, like you said, though, this is going to be something that the IMI is honed in on, but the wider industry all has to be part of it, doesn't it? Because it's no good.
Look, it's not a competitive issue. If it becomes a competitive issue, like a you know, within the industry, that's bloody stupid. Because excuse my language, but that I've seen so much of that. You know, I'm not trying to say the IMI. I want to stand up as the heroes who solve the problem for the industry because we're not. You know, we don't have the resource for that. We're not that big, you know, but neither is any trade body. And I include everybody in that, whether it's SMMT, RMI, anybody, you know, or all the others. Nobody has got the resources to do that on their own. It's far better that we all agree with each other and do a collective job. It's the same with all the employers out there. You know, if they all pull together, they'll all, you know, what's the old saying? A rising tide lifts all ships.
Yeah.
You know, that's often been the problem, that people think that they can kind of somehow find a silver bullet on their own and that'll give them a competitive advantage. But, you know, there isn't, you know, just hang back a bit, you know, helicopter out and look at the demographics. You know, we've got an upside down population, just like all of the Western countries have. You know, too many old people, not enough young people. There is no big lifeboat full of people coming up the river. So we've got to do something different. That's why we're so passionate about diversity and inclusion, because, you know, you cannot actually solve the problem by just talking to, you know, discrete sections of the population. You know, when half your population is female, you need to be talking to females, of course. You know, we've got a rich ethnic mix in this country. We need all of those people to be able to see that automotive is a place for them to work and a place where they can, you know, people like them actually come and succeed. And that goes for people with visible and invisible disabilities. Anybody, we shouldn't be turning anybody away, should we? That because potentially they're all capable of doing a great job for us.
Well, I think you've just answered my next question, because I was going to say, whose perceptions do you need to change? But I think you've just, that's it, isn't it? It's everybody's. You need everybody to think of all.
Well, you know, we've long known, James. Yeah, we've long known, James, haven't we? That because we've talked about it before, that actually there's an extraordinarily high percentage of people that do come into automotive, do so through a connection with a family member or somebody they know that's close to them. Maybe a neighbor or an uncle or something like that, but they start from a different place because they already actually have had a look behind the curtain. But there's this massive amount of the population that have no knowledge really at all about what goes on in automotive and how exciting and how, you know, and just the sheer variety of opportunities there can be. And so that's our challenge, isn't it? You know, and as I say, you know, it's exacerbated when let's say you're a young female and you look and think, well, I'm looking at that business and I don't see anybody else like me doing the sort of jobs I would want to do. And I'm not talking about, you know, being secretaries or whatever. I'm talking about, you know, I don't see any managers in that business who are female, for example. You know, same for somebody from a different ethnic background who looks and says, well, you know, I see a few people at the bottom end who are like me, but I don't see anybody in a suit, you know. And we know that's part of the problem, don't we? We know that, you know, people will say we do have a rich ethnic mix. Well, we don't once you start moving up the management ladder. And so these are all things we have to change if we want to solve our problem, because it's not solvable any other way. You know, there, like I said, there isn't a magic There isn't a magic solution to this. You know, even, yes. I mean, I said earlier on about us, you know, getting some of our occupations on the shortage occupation list. That would definitely help. That would enable us to bring some talent in from abroad, maybe even to bring back some of the talent we lost, you know, particularly now the exchange rate's turned around a bit. But, it won't be the whole solution. You know, it's part of. And, you know, we're going at it from every possible angle we can on, you know, from our, you know, doing what is our part to do as a professional body for the industry, you know, happy to work with every other body out there to get a result, you know?
Yeah. But it must have been slightly reassuring, just going back to Automechanica quickly, where you said that there was a lot of youngsters there. Taking interest, looking around and being enthusiastic about the interest. Surely that's a positive.
Yeah.
And that's probably a positive that we need to make more use of to get their voices out and to talk to people.
Yeah, it is, you know. I mean, you know, there are a lot of old faces in automotive. It's great to catch up with people you've known for a long time. But, you know, it's good to see the fresh blood as well. And, you know, full marks to Autotech for setting up that event. They brought a load of their students in, and they actually gave them a sort of a treasure hunt, sent them off around the show looking for answers to questions, and then they had a kind of a prize giving at the end for who got the most answers, you know. And it was great because it engaged them in the entire show, and it was designed to get them to find things out and understand things, you know, which is really clever, very, 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 very good. And you know, I think there's such a lot of innovation going on at the moment. You know, people, we're a brilliant industry for that. You know, we don't stay down for very long. When we're challenged on something, we kind of pick ourselves up and we find solutions. And the amount of innovation that was on show yesterday was, you know, mind-boggling. Some of the technology and you know, I defy anybody who didn't know anything about our industry, but does enjoy, you know, looking to the future and future technology and everything, not to have been motivated by that.
Yeah, yeah, okay. There's an awful lot on then at the IMI between the EV skills gap, ADAS, trying to change perceptions. How do you funnel your time to make sure that you're delivering for on all fronts, I guess.
I just don't go to bed, James. The truth is, I'm only 33. I just look this way because I don't go to sleep. It is a full on job. It really is. I mean, you know, as you know, we were very, very fortunate to get the services of Hayley Pells last year to come and be our policy manager, you know, because I can't be in, you know, multiple places at once. And you do need to be banging on doors at Westminster all the time. And there's nobody better than Hayley to do that, because she is so motivated, so enthusiastic, so knowledgeable, and so credible, because she's been there, she's done it, she has her own business and so on. And it really is a relentless job, because you've got to understand that politicians, you know, have got limited time. They've got a lot of people asking them for stuff. You know, we're one of God knows how many sectors, aren't we? We're an important one. Yeah, you know, it's I used to Back in the day, I used to say to my team at when I worked at BMW that, you know, you regularly have to go to Munich just to take your memos from the bottom of someone's pile and put them on the top, you know, just to make sure that, you know. And to an extent, that's what it's about. You know, you've got to, if you're in their face, you're more likely to get a result than you are if you're waiting for something to happen. You do have to be relentless. We proved that with TechSafe. We got a result in the end. We got the government endorsement. We got health and safety executive endorsement. But my God, it was hard work. It was like pushing water uphill with a fork most of the time, you know. And when things weren't going the way you wanted them to, you had to sort of reinvent it and come up with different solutions, you know. Mm. I mean, we spent a long time trying to get new regulation, and in the end, we found the solution with existing regulation. But yeah, it's you know, you can't give up, yeah. You know, and luckily we've got a very engaged, very enthusiastic team. So yeah. You know, who enjoy what they do. So and we are beefing it up. Actually, I mean, we're doing. You know, we're seeing a lot of growth. Our membership has grown considerably. You know, we're knocking on the door of 100,000 now. Mm. You know, we've got so much to do for our members, and so much more we want to do for them, and so much more we want to engage them in. You know, onwards and upwards.
Yeah. Well, I think I know the answers to this because you've already said you're a very positive person anyway. But given your past successes and possibly a couple of hurdles overcome, how positive are you that you can, in terms of perception campaign, the EV skills gap and ADAS as well, how confident are you that you can bridge the skills gap and change the perceptions of automotive to encourage more people in there?
Well, look, I think there's quite a lot in there, really.
I think that's why I ask questions are easy.
Yeah, that's right. The EV skills gap, particularly. I mean, we'll get there. We'll get there. The engagement with the necessary qualifications is really, really high and remains high. And as long as we stay there, we will get there. I think. Look, there's a lot of people in the industry have got to make decisions, haven't they? If you work in the at the front end in the sort of franchised or dare I say agency networks. Of the manufacturers, you know, I mean, it's a matter of fact, isn't it? You know, the cars you will be selling will be the latest technology. So you don't have a choice as to whether you engage or not. And anyway, the manufacturers wouldn't let you kind of opt out there. I always find it odd when we contrast between the franchise sector, which is very defined. It's roughly 5,000 businesses, 5,000 dealers, should I say, not businesses, but 5,000 dealers. And but the independent sector is like everything else. And that includes like the really big boys, like the Halfords, the national chains, and, you know, one man working on someone's drive. Yeah. There's a proportion of those people who will be saying, you know what, I don't really want to engage in this. You know, I'm at a certain point in my career. There's 31 million of these, of the old cars on the road. You know, that'll see me out, you know. Yeah. And actually, from 2030, broadly speaking, I mean, we're looking at 15 years-ish when there's still going to be a significant amount of ICE cars out there. And I get that. So, you know, some people won't engage, but anybody who wants a business beyond 2030, you know, for a decent period of time, and basically wants to be, you know, not just working on old technology, has got to engage, haven't they? They don't have a choice.
They
don't have a choice. So I think basically the logic of that. I think initially there was a reluctance to engage, particularly out in the non-franchised sector, because people were saying, well, if I learn this stuff, I won't then see them for and I'll forget it, and I'll have to do it all over again. And I sort of understood that for a while. I think people's perceptions are changing now because these vehicles are becoming more plentiful. It's the same with ADAS. You know, I've said there's a big job to do there. I am positive. I think if we work together, we've got lots of good stories to tell. I think we can turn around this growing vacancy problem. We have to. Mm. I mean, you know, the last few months we've measured it. It's gone from 22 to 23 up to 26. You know, that's not a good trend for us to be seeing. You know, we absolutely have to come together to solve that. But I'm sure we will.
Okay, smashing. Well, that sounds like a good note to end on. Something positive, which is always great. And but is there anything that you want to add to the discussion we've had?
No, I will just repeat that message that when we go live with the perceptions campaign, you know, don't wait for everybody else to do their bit, do your bit, you know. So whoever you are listening to this, you know, one of our 95,000 plus members, or indeed anybody else who's listening to this podcast, you know, it's a message for you. It's a message for you. You know, you'll have people working in your organisations who would be great examples of why you should join the automotive industry. Tell us about them.
That's all we have time for, unfortunately. But thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again on the next podcast.